show. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Looky here, a new week begins. Well, it too will be a little bit strange, but aren't they all? But this one will be a little bit strange because we've got a holiday intruding, as it were. Thursday is Thanksgiving. And because here's how I see it. I'm going to try to do a show on Friday. I know most everybody in the United States of America gets Thursday and Friday off, but we'll try to be here for a show Friday on the front porch. This is the horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. You see how? See what happens after I miss a day? I'm just right out of the gate. This is the horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. It's a little experiment in internet broadcasting that started. Well, its absolute beginnings go back to February of 2004, but the internet only portion is a little over, well, we're on our way to our eighth year now. And it has happened all along because of your commitment to keeping it on the air. That's why we will begin the program with Robert's challenge to get us over the hump for the evening's fundraising. Let's just put that out there early on. Got a note from Robert in Australia. He said, it's Tuesday, November the 20th here in Australia. My regular day for a contribution. So how about a $75 challenge to start the week? I'll match $75 in contributions with $75 of my own, which will make Monday's target of $150. If you already have a challenge for today, please move mine to tomorrow or the day after. No, that's perfect. That gets the week started just perfectly, Robert, and thank you very, very kindly. And that will get the week off to a roaring good start. Of course, we had no live program on Friday because I was off playing hooky. I had the opportunity to go and sit down in a very nice meeting doing some outreach work about mountaintop removal. It was very pleasant. Ferg and I drove down and then came back Friday night, same night and everything. But it was a very nice trip all together and some very pleasant new people I got to meet. But because I wasn't here, I was just like, to get started with this evening's show. Because I think, I look forward to every show. I don't know about y'all, but I do. And pleasantly, I can say that I get a lot of feedback saying, yep, can't wait for this one. More and Mondays have become particularly popular. And by the way, you can get the horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com simply by going to HeadOnRadioNetwork.com and clicking Listen Live. Of course, most of you who are already listening know that, but if somebody should happen to hear this running on one of the very many different platforms on which the Horn Live and rerun streams go, things like Roku and Streama.com, TuneIn Radio, we're quite popular there. Dar.fm, we've had some popularity there. We talked about that. Stitcher, internet radio. There's a million different ways to listen to the horn. For the podcast feed address is at whiterosesociety.org under the Head On with Bob Kincaid subdomain. And, of course, you can get it at iTunes. Wherever you get it, it is free. and the contributions that come in make it possible for those who cannot contribute to be able to listen without paying a fee as well, because this is a community style effort. It's not going to be driven by rank, rancid profiteering. So thank you very kindly to all those of you who do contribute. We got a contribution in over the weekend that took care of Friday, even though there was no live show on Friday. Thank you very much. And so, with any luck at all, we'll take care of tonight via Robert's $75 Get the Week Started Right, It's Already Tuesday in Australia challenge. Okay, the PayPal button is at headonradionetwork.com. So, too, is the snail mail address. More on that tomorrow. The snail mail address is under the tab Contribute for those of you who want it now. The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB, personal mailbox, 318 Beckley, West Virginia, 25801. Any checks or money orders need to be made payable to The Horn or Head On Communications. Not Bob Kincaid. We have a hard time putting those through the bank because, well, it's not Bob Kincaid's money. So The Horn or Head On Radio or Head On Communications, something like that. For checks and money orders. And thank you to all of you who contribute via the mailbox and via the PayPal, because they all do everything does the same thing. It makes it possible for this to remain a show in being. Oh, hi. I'm Bob Kincaid. Yeah, there. I don't know why I forget to do that. I guess I just assume things. But I mentioned it earlier. It is Moran Monday, and we do have some scheduling issues, and here's how it breaks out. We're going to do no show on Thursday. I don't know. I don't know if it's going to be possible to do a show on Friday or not. I think Agnes would probably like to go over and visit the grandchildren, if that's okay with you guys. And that's not me being a smartass. On Saturday, we will have a Prism West Virginia American History Chat. If you've never checked those out, please do. PrismWV.org is the website, and the video archives are also posted there, so you can go through a few of them. We're still adding them in as time permits. But you can see, for instance, what Dr. Bill and Professor Keith have been talking about this past, or through this part of this semester's course in the American Prism American History Series. PrismWV.org. You can also, go there. Go there for that, and that's a great place to go. You can when we do the live Prism chats, you can also get them via the regular Horn audio stream. And I should mention that there is a chat room with Prism, PrismWV.org, and if you want to get questions in during the live streaming chat session, you're free to participate via the chat room. Your questions will be transmitted to Dr. Bill and Professor Keith. Then comes next week. And next week is a road week. But I'm taking the gear with me, and hopefully we will be broadcasting live from AIC headquarters, Appalachian Communities Health Emergency Campaign headquarters in Washington, D.C. And with any luck at all, we'll be able to have a semi-normal understanding that normal is merely a setting on a dryer. Thank you, Peter Godbold. Semi-normal broadcast week. So that's the way things are playing out for now. Like I said, it's Moran Monday. And Moran Monday has grown in great popularity simply because it's an opportunity to bring forward such absolutely lunatic examples of white wing insanity and idiocy. And it looks like this evening is going to be the same. Now, we've got all kinds of potential white wing lunacy. You'll notice I'm calling it the white wing lately. I think it's appropriate. There we go. I think it's appropriate because the election results make it apparent, make it abundantly clear that the stupid of the right wing is lily white, and hence the new term. But we've got all kinds of stupid for this this 19th day of November edition of More in Monday. Not kidding.
You've got to remember that these are just simple farmers. These are people of the land. You know, morons.
That's right, that's right, that's right. Step right up, hurry, hurry, hurry. It's Moran Monday on the horn. You can't tell the Morans without a program, and this is the program that tells the Morans. You just can't tell them much. Behind this thin cybernetic veil of cybernetic canvas reside all manner of right-wing Morans. Drunkens, homicidal ones, death-threatening ones, pizza-making ones, confectionery pastry-making Morans. Women are advised to hang on to their purses as the Morans can get a little bit grabby. Children are advised against coming into the Moran Monday tent, lest they be forever scarred. Less than 5 cents per hour of programming is what it costs to bring you this Moran Monday. This view of the weird, the right wing, the white wing, the ignorant, the stupid, the malicious. In other words, the conservative, the teabaggers. It's Moran Monday on the horn, friends and neighbors. Head for the hills, or you'll be up to your armpits in Morans. Yes, indeed it is. Now, what does that mean for today? Well, this story has been out there for a few days now, but I wanted to save it for a Moran Monday because it is special. If you are signed up over at the Horn's Facebook page, you'll notice that our old buddy Matt Osborne periodically posts there his musings from his blog, Osborne Inc. And over the last few months, he has been blogging about, and, you know, he's a talented writer as it is, but somewhere along the way, he stepped on the toes of right-wing bloggers. And it is a story that I will not even begin to attempt to relate because it has all the Byzantine twists and turns of, I don't know, Dark Shadows on Acid. And all of the, well, we're talking about Morans here. We're talking about right-wingers. And so there's, like, cloak and daggery stuff involved. There's a right, there's, and others have written about this as well. Caroli, famously from Crooks and Liars, has written about it. So too has even Salon. And that's where I was given the inspiration earlier today to go back to what Matt had experienced, since this is Moran Monday. The right wing has been obsessed with a guy by the name of Eric Kimberlin. Or Brett Kimberlin. Brett Kimberlin. I'm sorry. To the absolute loss of what remained of what passed for their senses. Like I said, it's far too complex to try to even explain, except to say that a bunch of these people are the former acolytes of the gratefully dead Andrew Breitbart. Now, along the way, there have been, I don't know, what would you call him,
a secret agent? I don't know, there was this goofy guy we mentioned several months back who called himself Randy Hahn. And he kind of tried to run a sort of a scam on a bunch of typically near-starving progressive bloggers and tweeters. He was quickly found out. This guy's got multiple personalities and lots of sock puppets and comes from the Houston area. More on Houston in a minute. It is Moran Monday. But, and this is where this segment comes in. He fancied himself a right-wing budding radio star. Now, I'm not going to sit here and cue up Bob Seger playing on a long and lonely road east of Omaha in miserable Denver. No, I'm not going to get up on the cross. We all need the wood. But this ain't easy. And it does require, despite the fact that people like Mark Levin are allowed behind microphones, a modicum of talent. And it requires an absolute boatload of dedication. Crawl in behind the microphone night after night after night. And try to come up with something remotely interesting to say. I'm lucky in that regard because I have the whole Horn family and a format that we invented called Conversation Radio, whereby you guys make this far more interesting than I ever could. But because of platforms like Blog Talk Radio, in which anybody with a pulse can find out if they've got what it takes to do radio, America, or some tiny portion of it, was treated to the vocal stylings of Randy Hahn, who at one point in time had some sort of blog talk radio program going where he'd get 6,000 downloads per show. But once he began being outed, having the disinfecting light of scrutiny exposed to his world, he began to run a little bit off the rails. And so, on the 9th of November, remember, the 9th of November, no, that's not what that is. On the 9th of November, Matt Osborne, who had been busily exposing this goofball, called up Randy Hahn's blog talk radio program. And what you're about to hear is a passage from that program. What you're about to hear is a right-winger behaving like right-wingers behave. Hahn had issued, literally, threats against Matt Osborne's life. Let me say this about broadcasting. And granted, you know, I have spun gospel records for an audience of upstanding Christians. I've spun rock and roll. I've done morning and evening newscasts. I've broadcast worldwide newscasts. Literally, at one point in time, the youngest human being ever to do a global radio newscast. Yeah, my little gold star. I'm not so good at the business end of radio, but I've got a pretty good idea of what needs to happen behind the microphone. And there are generally a couple of ground rules, whether one is left wing or right, white wing. One of those is, in any room where there is a microphone, always assume that same is live. Do not say anything in front of a microphone that you would not like to be electronically transmitted to God knoweth where. George W. Bush learned that to his chagrin a few years back. Mumbling to Tony Blair in front of a microphone and using dirty words that the for-profit media were so shocked and the FCC didn't want the American people to hear. I remember that occasion because we actually played the words, because the FCC got nothing on us. But that's rule one. Always assume a mic is live. Rule two, you know, and that's, I call that the microphone corollary to the handgun law. Always assume that any gun is loaded. Otherwise, there can be funerals. Always, rule one, the microphone corollary to the handgun law, always assume a microphone is live. Rule two is, do not get behind said microphone if you've been drinking. I call that the microphone corollary to the automobile law. Don't get behind the wheel of an automobile if you've been drinking, and the same applies for microphones. While the right wing is, the white wing is very good at bringing along new future Limbaughs, and while there is there are 962 separate tiers of right wing blatherheads, ranging all the way from Hannity and the oxymoron and that, you know, tier one, all the way down to tier 962, which is Randy Hahn. And I don't have a corollary for rule three, but don't make death threats over the air. That's another one. And that takes us to the actual audio. Liquored up, live mic, and death threats. This is the Randy Hahn Show.
But why would you mess with him in real life? Why would you mess with me in real life? Why would you mess with anybody in real life over Twitter? Why would you do that?
Well, because I'm going to come
and
kill you.
Why would you? Because
I'm going to come and kill you.
Why would you? You were going to kill me.
Yes.
You were going to kill me.
Yes.
Yes.
That's interesting. How are you going to kill me?
I'm going to lock
tell
up behind
you. Tell me how you're going
to
kill me.
I'm going to lock up behind you at night, and I'm going to put a gun to your head. I'm going to put a gun in your head. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. How are you going to sneak up on me? Join that in MI6. What color was the boathouse?
Now, we've got a lot of movie buffs in the Horn family. Did you catch that line? What color was the boathouse? Because quite often, these right-wing freakazoids share something in common. They make up pasts that they don't have. In this case, this particular right-wing goober, having published in the past, I am a political operative. I was a plant inside the progressive movement. I work for the CIA, MI6, and SEAL Team 6. And there's no little smiley face icon or emoticon or anything there to indicate sarcasm either. Now, you got this? This guy is behind a microphone making death threats.
I'll put a gun in your head. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. How are you going to sneak up on me? Join that in MI6. What color was the boathouse?
Okay, so I don't have any prizes to give away or anything. But anybody want to email in, bobkincaid@gmail.com, bobkincaid@gmail.com, with the, I don't know, tonight's Moran Monday trivia question? What color was the boathouse? What movie does that come from? No fair cheating and going over to Matt's site and finding out. Oh, damn. Randy Hahn apparently doesn't know either. Did you hear that snort? What color was the boathouse? You can almost hear subconsciously. Newman. Got me.
What color was the boathouse?
You're an idiot.
The Naval Academy. That's my favorite moment. Naval Academy.
Yeah.
It's spelled N-A-V-A-L, okay?
No, really. I about fell down when this one came along. In terms of the rest of the world that this guy made up about himself, he was a Naval Academy grad. You know, just like out of the Jimmy Buffett song, "We Are the People Our Parents Warned Us About." I was supposed to have been a Jesuit priest or a Naval Academy grad. Only our genius former member of SEAL Team 6, MI6, and... Yeah, he went to the NAVEL Academy. I guess it's a little school down in South Florida where they teach you how to cross-pollinate freaking oranges.
Yeah.
Just for future reference, that's the difference.
Yes, sure
between
is.
You're drunk and you're tweeting and you don't know what you're doing, and you get on the air and call me an idiot... What you've been doing is acting like an idiot all year. Tell me.
And it's fascinating. I mean, this guy's been putting these threats out. I mean, a picture of a woman dressed in kind of dom gear with a pair of sideways held pistols pointed at the lens of a camera. You know, I'm going to get you, Matt. I don't think these freaks could load a weapon without hurting themselves, you know, getting a really nasty pinch trying to put the clip into the... Right. I give you such a pinch. He's gone after Caroli? Over at Crooks and Liars? Oh, this is just bizarre. Let me check real quick before we go back to the audio. We've got three winners and a smart alecky comment, and I would expect nothing less from Jim. We've got three winners. We've got Brandon was first in under the wire. The movie was Ronin. Isaac got it right, too, as did Ron and Raleigh. It's a great movie, the De Niro movie. It's fun. What color was the boathouse at Hereford? Just by way of elaboration and elucidation. This is what we're talking about in a minute, you know, because the old horn computer ain't quite what it used to be. You know Ronin, right? 1990s movie, kind of a spy thriller. Yeah. Well, I guess the computer's not going to cooperate. Dadgummit. See, what kind of slays me about all this is if half of the conspiracy that these right-wing knuckle brains are blathering about was true, I wouldn't be behind a microphone saying, well, it looks like the computer's not going to cooperate, because...
What color is the boathouse at Hereford?
There we go. It is working. Because, you know, we'd all be awash in George Soros money, because that's their fascination, George Soros.
What color is the boathouse at Hereford?
Yeah, I'm not going to spoil it for you because there's a bit of a giveaway. And then Jim's delightful comment. Magenta, of course. No? Now that's the kind of answer you get from somebody who might actually formerly been MI6 or SEAL Team 6 or CIA or NSA or FBI or... Yeah, right. Magenta? Ronin is available for viewing over at Netflix. See how I work the product placements in? We don't have to be broke. Come on, Netflix. A little love here. But no, the right wing is obsessed with George Soros and thinks that anybody who ever said a kind word about a Democrat is wallowing in the lap of luxury, thanks to these checks that just, I mean, there's a check writing machine inside the George Soros movement, somewhere just, you know, second crag to the left from Mount Doom. But anyway, to get back, so that's where that comes from. And if we had it in our ability, there would be lovely prizes for everybody who got that right.
All year. So, well, tell me the truth.
I'm going to come and kill you. No. Not because I wanted to. I'm going to.
No, you're going to.
Yes.
You're going to kill me. How are you going to kill me? You're going to come up behind me with a gun and shoot me in the back of the head. How are you going to manage that? How are you going to pull surveillance on my neighborhood? Do you know where I live?
Yes.
Yeah, yes. Tell me where I live.
I'm not telling
you. Well, behind the boat house of Hereford.
Tell me that. This thing that you know, that I already know. You know what? Go ahead and tell me that. Where do I live?
This is Right Wing Radio.
We talked for a long time. I told you where I...
The philosophical difference between this and the 3 hours of bloviation of Flush Flimball is mathematical zero. It's the same stuff. It's just a little bit more stupid down at Tier 962.
I talked about where I live. And you don't know this? How do you not know this?
Does it matter all that much? Really?
Yeah.
Why?
Because you're threatening to kill somebody? Just a guess?
Why are you so hateful? Why do you want to hurt me?
No. Why does it matter all that much?
Why does it matter all that much that you want to hurt me?
Why does a death threat matter all that much? And I guess that's a question the white wing generally can't answer for itself.
Oh, we just talk about wanting to kill them. I mean, wouldn't you? I mean, any sort of decent American would want to kill liberals, so it's wasn't. You have lovely feet. Right?
No, I'm going to kill you.
You're going to kill me?
Yes.
Again? That's
not
two death threats in one conversation.
Not again. I'm going to kill you.
That's the third time.
Yes.
You know what? Keep talking. You're going to kill me. Tell me about how you're going to kill me. Keep talking about how you're going to kill me.
I'm going to kill you.
Say it again.
I'm going to kill you.
Now, tell me about how you conned the progressive left on Twitter.
Mother McCree. You know, it's kind of funny. Matt notes that the entire far left of right podcast, and I take it from what Matt writes that he means everything this guy ever produced has been deleted by Blog Talk Radio. And another one of this guy's sock puppets, Seth Plate, announced that Randy Hahn had died. Not kidding. If you peruse Matt's last couple of months of work, you'll see some actual investigative journalism. all the right bunch of right wingers, the little Breitbart creatures, obsessed with Brett Kimberlin, Neil Rauhauser, names that absolutely meant nothing to me. No offense, but I just never heard of them. And but over there in the white wing nutosphere, they were hopping up and down like, well, those proto humans having a hissy over the monolith. But that just had More and Monday written all over it. Death threats into a microphone, out into the into some server. I guess this guy's only defense is that he was liquored up, right? I can't tell if that's a... Well, it's kind of hard to... Not, my guess is that's either a tequila drunk or a gin drunk. That doesn't sound like a bourbon drunk. Fritz writing in from Arkansas. Old drunken Randy must be out of his blue pills because he can't get his gun up, so he's overcompensating by invoking some Walter Mitty-esque badass mobster. And too far in the closet to indulge his Dom sub fantasies. But the backstory on all this is really fascinating. They've done some really evil crap. There's one right-wing blogger who's actually a member of the district attorney's office in Los Angeles who has been involved in some of this stuff. Not the Randy Hahn stuff, but the Kimberlin Rauhauser stuff. Yeah, you can go and get the background over at the Horn's Facebook page. Like I said, and it's not for want of... the story is untellable. I mean, it's... It makes trying to read James Joyce's Ulysses look positively straightforward and linear. Weird. So that's Exhibit 1 for Moran Monday. There are, of course, multiple exhibits. But when you get done with something like that, it begs a bumper. It really does. Even if we don't play the whole darn thing, it begs a bumper. This has got to roll. Forget how to hate part. That's nothing that these right-wing trolls are ever going to do. I mean, God almighty. I don't think I could snort a bag of sea monkeys and get any loopier. And you know, of course, the story, this being More in Monday, it's a late nomination. We would have had this for Friday on the front porch, but I was playing hooky. You know the head of the GOP in Maine, who is quite sure that election fraud, voter fraud, took place, not election fraud, voter fraud, damn it, took place in Maine in the presidential election, and we all know why.
But
you still think we have a system that's full of fraud?
I do. Yeah. I'm going to do a mailing right off. In some parts of the state, there were, for example, in some parts of rural Maine, there were dozens of black people who came in to vote on election day. Everybody has the right to vote, but nobody in town knows anybody that's black. How did that happen? I don't know. We're going to find out.
Nobody in town knows anybody's black. I mean, the towns in rural Maine. Jesus. I mean, everybody's got a right to vote, but nobody in town knows anybody's black. God. Morons. Morons. And that guy's the head of the Maine GOP. And it's not like the Republican Party of Maine consists of, you know, five people and a half a gallon of Ripple. Or Mad Dog, more like. Holy mackerel. No. Not that. No, let's at least get a giggle or so along the way. But paranoia is a big part of white wing moranity. The Sunday News talkie-talkie fests. You know, things like Face the Prostitutes or Meet the Nation or... Right. With those very, very serious members of the for-profit media journalism consortium who know exactly what we need to be thinking about. Well, over on Meet the Prostitutes... Mike Rogers, the House Intelligence Committee chairman, wandered by with a degree of paranoia that you would have to go and find clips from Dr. Strangelove to match. Because with no evidence whatsoever, secret, top secret, double secret probation, nothing. Nothing but, well, I don't know, those sea monkeys in his brain. Maybe I'm not the, I've never snorted them, but. Mike Rogers said, I'm not sure the president was not told about General Petraeus before Election Day. The Attorney General said that the Department of Justice did not notify the president. But we don't know if the Attorney General did. Ignoring, of course, for a moment, the fact that the Attorney General is the head of the, you know, Department of Justice. You know, Department of Justice, c'est moi kind of thing. It's that whole not understanding the Venn diagram thing that seems to so constantly dog... Repiglicans and white wingers and teabaggers and such like. Attorney General Holder, whatever problems I may have with him, and there are lots, said no, nobody told the president because there were, well, you know the story by now. A story that now has now gone as far as, thank you, Beth,
encompassing a radio talk morning shock jock called Bubba the Love Sponge. That's probably why I'm not out there on terrestrial radio. I don't have a catchy name like the Love Sponge. Sweet Jesus. If I had a catchy name like the Love Sponge, I think I would have to, I don't know, contemplate suicide about 19 dozen times a day. Hi, honey. How was work over at the Love Sponge Factory? Spongy! But these white wingers are not going to be deterred from their determination by something as annoying as, you know, facts. Because, see, there's a Negro in the White House. And that by itself is dangerous, as proven by the fact that he wanted to give, well, not wanted to, he did. He gave gifts to all those people who then returned the love by going out and voting for him. I mean, he gave out free contraception and the Dream Act and stuff, and he gave out food and Obama phones, and ew! So any man that could do anything that low and that dastardly, well, he and his minions would have no compunction against hiding the fact that they had secret telepathic abilities to read the minds, not to mention the emails, of shirtless FBI agents. By the way, how does Bubba the Love Sponge come into this? I can't believe that I've now said that name four or five times. Jesus, it feels like Beetlejuice. Okay, so here's how it goes down. Jill Kelly was big friends with General Petraeus and General Allen and a number of other beribboned and bedecked and bedazzled high-ranking members of the military. Bubba the Love Sponge announced on his radio program some time back that he was going to, I kid you not, deep fat fry a Quran on air. Because, see, that's what you make the big bucks for in corporate-controlled terrestrial radio these days. No, I am not, Jim. Really. That's what he calls himself. Jim is sometimes shocked by the culture, and I understand why. I'd heard about this clown before. But he announced repeatedly, because that's what gets you the big bucks in the for-profit terrestrial radio business, that he was as sure as God made little green apples and they'll give you the runs if you eat too many of them, that he was going to deep fat fry, of course this comes with the implication, you know, in pig fat, a Quran. And apparently, because this is Moran Monday, the best idea the top brass of the U.S. military could come up with was to call extreme party host Jill Kelly, no, really, to get Bubba the Love Sponge to pretty please stop talking about deep fat frying a Quran. I wish, oh Lord, how I wish I was making this up. But I'm not. Oh no, I'm not. This is for real. The American military, with all the guns and bullets and stuff that it has at its disposal, with the ability to blast God knows what to God knows where, was reduced to begging a party hostess grifter to stop Bubba the Love Sponge from deep fat frying a Quran. This is, of course, after Bubba the Love Sponge. Please, God, if you're there, it's me, Bob. Don't make me ever have to do another show in which Bubba the Love and Sponge ever appear in sequential order out of my mouth and into this microphone. I feel like I'm going to have to gargle with 20 Mule Team Borax as it is, God. Bubba's real name is Todd Allen. No, really, Clem. Clem. C-L-E-M, Clem. And he just got out of some nasty litigation with Hulk Hogan for having surreptitiously videoed Hulk Hogan having sex. This is the guy who sent Generals David Petraeus and Allen into full-on sweat condition alpha because he said he was going to deep fat fry a Quran. Because everybody knows that number one with a bullet in Kabul drive time is Bubba the Love Sponge. News story I'm looking at says, when the Florida shock jock threatened to deep fry a Quran, and I really do have to start reading more closely because the first few times I read it, I was going, this is just weird. He couldn't do that because I was adding a vowel. And because under the caption of Jill Kelly, it says, well, never mind. Okay, I thought it was... I thought it said Korean. I was like, well, damn. He couldn't do that. But then I, no, Quran. Because I'm used now, you know, and it shows how you get used to things. I'm used to seeing Quran spelled capital Q-U apostrophe R-A-N. When the Florida shock jock threatened to deep fat fry a Quran, General John Allen, the commander of the U.S. and NATO troops in Afghanistan, and CIA Director David Petraeus both spoke to Social Climbing Kelly, asking to help them with a potential threat to the safety of serving American troops. Emails released between Tampa Mayor Bob Buckhorn and... just keeps getting better. And 37-year-old Kelly revealed that she was indeed acting at the behest of high-level U.S. government officials and implored the mayor to act.
"I have Petraeus and Allen both emailing me about getting this dealt with," Kelly wrote to Buckhorn on March 7th.
The previous day, Kelly told Buckhorn of similar requests she had received from General Allen and Vice Admiral Robert Harward, Deputy Commander of the U.S. Central Command in Tampa.
"I just got off the phone with General Allen and Admiral Harper," she wrote. "I'm going to need your assistance, vice versa, with the potential crises we'll be dealing with."
I wonder if anybody saw the big board. When Buckhorn responded to say it was being dealt with, she said,
"They asked me to get involved like I did when it happened with the pastor last year."
You remember Pastor Terry Jones, who was not the Terry Jones who was on Monty Python? You know, porn stash Pastor Terry Jones? Yeah. Timing-wise, this episode with Bubba the Love Sponge came right before she complained to an FBI agent about threatening emails she was receiving from Paula Broadwell, who began an inquiry that covered her affair with the retired four-star general. Somebody get Mike Rogers on the line! I mean, my God, that... it was probably engineered right out of the White House basement and kept secret until after the election. Okay, so with any luck at all, that will be the last mention of either Petraeus, Jill Kelly, Jill Bongwater, General Allen, or mercifully Bubba, the Love Sponge, for the rest of the night, and forever and ever as far as, you know, that very last one is concerned. Jeebus. Oh, God. Makes my head hurt. But that's what, you know, it's my fault. We all created More and Monday together. But ultimately, I was the one who consented. It's my fault. My fault. And then, as Michael notes, there's Lindsey Graham. Speaking of the Sunday shows, I forget if it was Press the Meat or whatever, but Senator Lindsey Graham was on screaming about Benghazi again, and he made some comments which were ironic enough that I felt they merited a snarky Facebook post, which I promptly forgot to post. So here goes. Lindsey Graham on TV accusing President Obama of withholding information from the electorate for a political advantage? Ain't that a little bit like the pot in the closet calling the kettle black? Meanwhile, says Michael, the other pot, the rusty old cracked pot, just calls the kettle that one. That one. We are barely
even started. If this was a drinking program, we might not make it to 9 p.m. Eastern Time. Before we had the lampshades on. But there's no high bob or anything going on, and don't anybody try to start get up a game of... No, because I am never going to say that terrestrial for-profit media high-quality broadcaster's name again if I can ever get away with it, now that I've whispered it into the ear of the universe, however. That probably means that there will be 9 dozen freaking stories about in the next day and a half. I don't care what he does. I ain't doing no story about him. Ain't, and you can't make me. Just ain't. So we will take a little break and come back. To your calls, 304-658-3333. This is Conversation Radio. Conservative-free, right-wing-free, free for the rest of the program. And I'm Bob Kincaid.
It's your second hour in the liberal sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
You know what one of the biggest problems I've found to be with Maureen Monday? More and more often it seems that... Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. This is The Horn. More and more often it seems that Maureen Monday and Prayer Meeting Wednesday are overlapping. But there's some stuff... So all you can do is kind of work on an ad hoc case-by-case basis and see which one... what you think. Is there a greater Maureen quotient here or a prayer meeting religion industry insanity quotient? And that really all you can do, it's just, you know, it's all judgment calls. But be that as it may, we are going to stop shilly-shallying about. I remind you that Robert's $75 Let's Take Care of Maureen Monday's fundraising November 20th challenge, because it is on the table, because it's already November the 20th in Australia. The PayPal button is at headonradionetwork.com. So too is the snail mail address. $75 on the table from Robert, and anyone who cares to match, well, between his 75 doubling yours, well, that means that we will take care of tonight's $150 fundraising. Let's go straight to the let's go to the Skype line. Bob Kincaid Horn on Skype. Sandra's with us. Hey, Sandra.
Hey, Bob.
How you doing?
I don't know if you can hear me, or...
You're a little overdriven, a little overmodulated, but we'll work on it.
All right, because this keeps going in and out. I don't know. I'm trying to figure out maybe I can turn it down.
Yeah, you're okay.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that Matreus, I know you don't want to talk about it, but... you know, I heard something that I thought was quite interesting. I mean, that chick down in Tampa is, you know, the whole, like, oh, she's Lebanese, and maybe she is in a position to inflict some serious counter-espionage on the whole story.
At this point, nothing would surprise me out of this. There's a level of seventh grade chicanery involved here that just won't stop.
Well, it's just, you know, it just seems really, it is. It's definitely bubble land. And, you know, why is this woman interjecting herself in these issues? It's really odd.
Well, it is. I'm no David Petraeus fan, but I remember a few years back, Sandra, when he said something along the lines of, you know, Israel was our biggest problem in the Middle East, not Iran, not Iraq, you know.
Yeah, now he's gone.
And now he's gone.
There is that. And also with the home chick, what's her name?
Broadwater.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the emails from her to that woman could easily be like, oh, hell, this woman might be compromising us. Maybe I should check her out. I mean, there's all different angles to it. And if you throw up the Israel thing with Petraeus, yeah, I had forgotten about that. But I do remember reading about him, and everyone was all sort of, you know, the vapors that he came out
with.
Well,
is it? Now, and see, I don't want to sound as paranoid and weird as Mike Rogers of Michigan, but isn't it kind of interesting that this breaks and then Israel decides to go slaughter some Gazans?
Yeah. Well, I mean, that whole situation can be cynical on so many different levels. I mean, first of all, you know, is this just practice for them to go off to Iran? And is this like, you know, Obama giving them a pass? Okay, Netanyahu, you can go and do this. Just don't.
Well, when you've got a big deal, hot shot, American funded anti-missile system, like so-called the Iron Dome system, you can only test that so many times on the simulator or with your own projectiles. Sooner or later, you've got to have some real hostile stuff coming in over the over top. And look, what a perfect way to test it before you decide to go and bomb the snot out of Iran and try to start World War III.
Right. Well, and you know, who cares about the Gazian, because since they elected Hamas, it's okay to kill them all. I mean, that is pretty much the logic out of Israel for why they're okay with killing kids and everybody else, because those people voted for them, so everybody's complicit, and if we kill a few of them, that's part of the plan. I mean, you know.
Yeah, right down to three-month-old little boys dead in their daddy's arms. I saw that the other day. The little boy's name was Mishrawi. His father is a photojournalist who lives in Gaza, and there he was holding his precious little three-month-old, bombed, you know, prematurely sent to heaven, I guess, by the Israelis, because, you know, they're only over there killing terrorists, and if they happen to kill a three-month-old, they will issue a statement saying, well, civilian casualties are regrettable.
Yeah.
But after all, Hamas is in amongst those people, so how are we supposed to stop Hamas without butchering a few babies?
Well, no, but I mean, it's just, you know, the only upside, and I don't mean for the Gazians, I mean, the whole thing for those poor people is a nightmare, but, you know, you are seeing cracks of you know, the reporting is lopsided, but it's not as lopsided. You know, if you go anywhere outside of the, you know, lamestream media, you can find information, but, you know, Obama just looks ridiculous talking about, you know, males, no country should have to. I'm like, Yemen? Pakistan? Mali? Somalia? Is he crazy? Talking about, well, no country should have to put up with missiles coming over and raining on them?
Yeah, my little irony alarm went off pretty loud at that.
I mean, I'm like, he said it a few times, and every time he said it, I'm like, what? You don't, your credibility is shot to hell, Mr. Obama. Are you talking about, you know, sending anything to people, when you have a handful of countries where you're doing exactly that, you know? It's incredible.
I did find one thing interesting, to the best of my knowledge, as of the last reporting I read. Did you know there hasn't been a drone strike since Petraeus stepped down? That was pointed out by Tom, and I never know how to pronounce his name, J-U-N-O-D. I don't know if it's Juno or Junod.
Oh.
Over on Charles Pierce's blog, in a post titled, I think, The Real Petraeus Scandal. He pointed out that he had interviewed somebody near to Petraeus in the past, and he said, Petraeus likes to be in the room when it happens. He likes to watch. Talking about drone strikes.
Oh, God.
And went on to point out that of the drone strikes, two-thirds of them have been done without President Obama's knowledge. One-third have been the ones that he signed off on because I guess the CIA decided they wanted somebody higher than them to put the blame on.
Mm. Well, yeah, yuck. I don't really know what the real deal is with the betrayal, but you know it's not the sex. It insults the intelligence of anybody who gives it more than a cursory thought. That's just BS. You know what I mean? Obviously.
No, but forgive me, Sandra, for my sick imagination. I just had this vision of, you know, him and what's her name, over in Afghanistan, and the 42-inch big screen on there in the bedroom while they're going at it. Oh, baby, look. Oh, look, he's about to get it. Oh! You know, with a loop of drone strikes because he likes to watch.
All these people are sort of, you know, drunk with power and all that goes with that. But, I'm more concerned about, you know, where, if Israel is actually gonna do this ground invasion or if it's just a bluff. You know, they gotta be getting pressure at this point because, you know, the people, it's a lot of dead babies being shown, tweeted, Facebooked. I don't know how much longer, you know, they can get away with that. So we'll see.
But by the same token, a guy who tweets as IDF spokesman has been burning up the Twitter sphere, justifying the slaughter. I mean, they're taking this social media thing very seriously. But there's a lot to there's a lot to be nervous about in all of this. But the other side of it is that the world, Israel acts as a law unto itself. And then, like you pointed out, President Obama made that I don't know how he could make the comment about missiles over your country without, you know, Jesus.
And choking.
What? Exactly. And, you know, so the rest of the world won't even slow them down. And so if they decide that they're going to roast the planet and start World War III, nobody will stop them. And that's the bottom line. And I don't even like saying that, but it's the truth, isn't it, Sandra?
It's true. But, I mean, you know, the political class and the elites are so, they're up to their eyeball in this, because I don't know if you got to see that videotape of that AP reporter losing it because the State Department wouldn't chastise Turkey. Have you seen this?
No.
Yeah, he's asking questions to a State Department, is giving a briefing, and he's flipping out because the Prime Minister of Turkey basically said Israel is committing acts of terror in Gaza. And this guy, a stenographer in every sense of the word, I guess, is chastising because our State Department won't say, you know, tell the Turkish Prime Minister to be quiet and not say that about our dear friend Israel. It was amazing to look at. It's like, dude, you're just, you know, what in the world? Yeah, it was crazy.
Oh, geez.
And it's like, he wasn't, you know, I mean, I guess some people thought he was about, you know, was trying to, you know, no, it was all about, you have to say good things about Israel, no matter what, and this ally is criticizing Israel, and you must clarify. And she did. She was badgered to clarify. I was like, oh, wow. So, you know, we're completely delusional here about, you know, our support for Israel.
And it goes back to what I've identified for years as the fetishization of Israel by the religious right. There's no national, and in this regard, David Petraeus was right. There's no national security concern that affects the United States from Israel. Israel does nothing for us. All we do is send money to Israel. Is there a value to us in seeing whether their Iron Dome system works?
Well, no, and you know the society Israel is also, you know, seems to be breaking down because, you know, this war satisfies a lot of issues. One of the main ones is, you remember the 300,000 people who were protesting Israel over its neoliberal, unequal, nightmarish economic system.
Right.
Well, that hasn't gone away. And in fact, I mean, there's, you know, as much hatred towards people within the Israel as there are the Arabs. I mean, that society is pretty nasty right now. You know, they hate Africans as some sort of existential threat. The Arabs are an existential threat. Poor people are, you know, it goes on and on with Israel. It's not a very nice place. So
at this point, can't we just say that everything is an existential threat if you're paranoid enough in Israel?
That's the thing. But it's interesting that I can't pronounce the different types of Jews. But you have the sort of European Jews, and then you have the Jews that are from, I don't know, the Middle.
You're talking about the Ashkenazim and the Sephardim.
And, as one starts with the M, M-I-Z. Anyway, you know, there's deep divisions there because most of the, some of them are working class and poor, and then you have the other ones who are sort of benefiting from the economy, and there's a lot of tension between that lot. So they turn the hatred towards who everyone hates, which is the Palestinians, and it just goes from there. I mean, it's a sort of sick situation there, and, you know, it sort of manifests itself in this kind of horrible violence, you know, which are these little wars they keep having. But this one, if it stops, another one will start. I mean, there is no end to it.
No, there's not.
Because they want the Gaza to go away.
Right. The ultimate end is for the Gaza Strip to be depopulated and repopulated with Israeli settlements.
Right, but that's a million people, so there's only a few ways of doing that. We don't even want to go there. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do. I mean, at this point in time, they've only managed to kill, you know, 100 and some odd civilians.
Well, no, but I mean, I've seen them talk about, they have changed it now, which is interesting, because this has always been the argument about their desperation to maintain Israel, is that demographics is working against them. And I just saw someone saying, well, Israel is within their right to respond to the demographic threat. Okay, I'm like, bingo. That's what they're calling it now. So,
well,
the population changes.
Yeah, years and populations are simply against them. It's similar, I guess, although not, to the angry old white folks in America.
No, but if they're saying we have a right to fight against the demographic threat, that means you need to genocide, I guess. I don't know.
That means you are killable for being who you are, demographically. But, you know,
right.
But the most stunning thing out of that, and it was a promptly suppressed story a number of years ago. I can't remember how many years ago. But a couple of curious scientists, you know how scientists are, Sandra, they start wondering about things and then they ask questions. And they looked at the Israeli-Palestinian conflict and said, I wonder if these really are separate ethnotypes. And so they compared some mitochondrial DNA from some Israelis and some mitochondrial DNA from Palestinians. And you know what they found out? They're the same people. There's no genetic difference between them. Like, say, you would you'd see a broader mitochondrial DNA difference between, say, somebody who was pure American Indian and somebody who was purely Australian Aboriginal.
Right.
Yeah, you'd be able to tell the difference genetically. Well, there's no difference, and so it's not even really demographic. It is impossible to make it, or at least what it boils down to for me, Sandra, this is a religious war.
Well, yeah, of course. But the thing is that the Israeli, they're boxing themselves in to a situation where nothing will ever come to peace, because they're cutting off every possible avenue now. So I suppose they think they're going to be on this war footing forever, but the internal politics may doom them faster than the so-called external threats at this point. So anyway, I don't know. I find the whole situation, just hideous. I hope it stops, you know, for the sake of those little ones I keep seeing on my computer screen being carried
this way and ever. Yeah, it's getting really, really painful to see it. You know, we got home last night, and Agnes was looking at her Twitter feed, and she just hands her phone to me, and she's bawling. And, you know, it's a group of little dead Gaza children.
Yeah, you know.
Who must have been, you know, who knew? Look, at this point in time, Israel has, for all practical purposes, adopted the philosophy of Colonel Chivington in Colorado in the 19th century. You know, Colonel Chivington is the cavalry officer who was asked, "What do we do about the old women, the old men, and the little children, and especially the children?" And Chivington responded, "Kill them all. Nits make lice."
Right. Well, I mean, it's amazing how much that society has changed since the assassination of, was it Rabin?
Yeah.
Yeah, that man was the last Israeli leader to offer hope for the whole region.
Right, he was also the last one who was playing with anything resembling sanity. He's the one who wrote that human history is written in blood, and it's time to pick another color.
Yeah, no, I mean, he was delivering, too. I mean, there was a lot more economic activity between Palestinians and Israelis. You know, just was a whole different reality. It was before the neoliberal pact that they made,
And remember, just as was the case with Gandhi, he wasn't killed by the other side.
Well, no, he was killed by some crazy.
He was killed by a right-wing Israeli.
Right, of course it's more complicated, but it's gone really downhill since 95 when they took that man out. And now the Israelis and the poor Palestinians are left with, a war criminal. Netanyahu is crazy, and he's desperate to go to war. And so I don't want Obama to be looking like Neville Chamberlain up in here, but listen, he needs to get it together, because this fool will just take us over a cliff, for real.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think he's has to be one of the more scarier leaders in the world.
Well, it's a little weird for me. This is just one of those stories from close to home, Sandra. But it seems like every time there starts to be saber rattling in the Middle East, especially alongside involving Israel, we start hearing fighter jets over our house. Now, we're not in the flight path of any military air base. Okay, we're just not. It's not like, I mean, I lived in Atlanta in the 1980s, and I was literally in the glide path of the Air Force base in Marietta, Georgia. So, you know, it was nothing to hear an F-15 just, you know, literally shake the glasses, the glassware off my shelves. But for the past 3 or 4 days now, we're getting fighter jets over top of these mountains here. And my theory all along has been, this is very interesting terrain if you think you're going to be flying in a mountainous region of, say, Iran. And I know that marks me out as a little bit paranoid. And at this point in time, I guess I am. But it's weird that every time the saber rattling starts over there, I get jets over my house.
Just
knocking the rust off, getting comfortable behind the stick again, flying some weird mountainous terrain, that kind of thing.
Yeah, I just wonder, it's not rational, because the Atlantic had a great article of the timeline for this latest, whatever you want to call it. And it was, it was the Israelis that sort of started all this by killing 13-year-olds and fishermen and farmers, and then, people respond with their little broke-ass rockets, and then they use their excuse to go in and assassinate one of the Hamas leaders, and it just goes from there. But we're told here constantly that, they're responding to rockets. We're not told that the Israelis started this one. We never hear that.
Well, and
that's what it was.
And the question, the other question is, there's the constant search for who done what first, which of course is counterproductive to any peace process to begin with. But what I've been thinking all along is, everybody wants to talk about who shot what. Have we forgotten that blockades of economic goods vital to the continued survival of a civilian population are, as a matter of international law, deemed to be an act of war? And under that scenario, Israel has been at war with the people in Gaza for God knows how long?
Oh, I know. That's why there's also listening to Obama talking about the right to defend. It's like, why don't you ever mention this blockade that's going on? And you know what I mean? It's just... So he just sounds like a complete, I don't know what Obama sounds like, but it's just ridiculous listening to him. And now the Congress just passed some sort of, we support vigorously Israel, blah, blah, blah. And it's just, I mean, it's too much. It's too much to see this country supporting the bully and turning the bully into a victim when it's so obvious.
Yeah, why did your nose get in the way of my fist?
Anyway, I don't...
Yeah, Isaac just sent me a tweet. Israeli troops on border open artillery fire on Gaza civilians.
Nice. Wow. Well, that's an expansion if that's what's going on.
Well, you know, Ron in Raleigh wrote in just a minute ago, Sandra, and he said, the meme is that Israel is our greatest ally in the Middle East. Correct me if I'm wrong, Ron says, but since being declared a state in 1948, I don't remember any Israeli boots on the ground in support of the United States. Were they in Korea? How about Vietnam, Grenada, Iraq, Afghanistan? So please, Ron says, explain how one can be an ally that never sheds one drop of blood on your behalf. The last time the Israelis engaged in any military action vis-a-vis the USA, they were blowing the hell out of the USS Liberty. With allies like these, you don't need enemies.
Yeah, don't forget the 212 Marines that got blown the hell up in Lebanon.
Yeah.
I mean, it goes on and on with this so-called close ally that we have no daylight in between. It's just sort of, I don't know, I kind of think that, you know, more and more Americans, and even if they don't pay attention to it, might be wondering, you know, what in the world, you know? So,
well, that's it. But that's we'll another. That's another one of those things that comes with the demographic shift in the United States. As this population becomes less white and fundamentalist, the desire to prop up Israel is going to become less important, I think. I mean,
I know, but it shouldn't be less important to Obama at this point, too, which is also so disturbing to me. I mean, he's in his second term now. I mean, there is no reason for him to be so effusive about it. And I'm just like, you know, what the hell's going on? And then I remember he's been molded in the same institutions as all these other freaks. So maybe that's just how it is.
It may be. But he also took tons of grief over the course of the election season, the campaign season. Oh, he doesn't love Israel enough. So, of course, it had to be put out there that, oh, he's been on the phone with Benjamin Netanyahu every day. I don't know what a phone call with Benjamin Netanyahu would possibly sound like unless it's just the opening soundtrack of the cackle of Woody Woodpecker. Yeah, because that guy's nuts.
Yeah, well, I just think that, you know, Obama might be making a big mistake if he thinks, like I said, giving Netanyahu a pass to do this will stop him from going to Iran. So
my personal guess is that they're hoping that if the Israelis go through and put their boots on the ground, that they'll get bloodied up enough to think twice about doing Iran.
Who knows? I mean, I don't really know.
And that's a calculus of which I'm not capable, that you'll sacrifice A to keep B from happening.
Yeah, we still have Syria. That's still going full blown. And the one that I'm finding really curious is the madness that's going on in Jordan.
I heard about that over the weekend.
Protests. Yeah. Well, I did a little bit more reading about it, and lo and behold, they've lifted subsidies on oil and food. And you know what that means when you ain't got jack. And all of a sudden they say, oh, we have to bring in austerity. So that's what they're doing in Jordan. And that's what he's getting is people riding in the street because they can't afford a 53% increase in heating fucking oil.
Yeah, and anybody who thinks that that's just some sort of tropical paradise doesn't know the lay of the land. It gets cold.
Yeah.
This time of year, oddly enough.
And, you know, people are, I mean, they're so mad that they're putting signs up saying, you know, replace, what is his name, the king? Replace him, and that's a punishable offense of 5 years in Jordan. So, you know, people are really pissed off. I mean, you can't stay down with the king there. They put your ass in jail. So people are putting those kind of signs up. So
And yet in that region, that passes for enlightened legislation because, what, in Saudi Arabia, they just cut your head off?
Well, yeah, but I mean, I just, you know, it's also this intersection with these people, the autocrats and neoliberal, which is just not working out because they keep trying to jack up the cost for basic necessities and they expect the people to do what?
Yeah.
Now, it's one thing to
point out. What else is left besides riot in the streets?
Well, yeah, but you wouldn't ride in the street if you, most people will put up with a lot if they can eat, they're warm, their children are reasonably safe.
Yeah, and don't, yeah, and I was going to say, and don't watch their children die.
Right, but when you start, you have a horrible police state, and now you're making the cost of living out of reach of base of most people, well, that equates riots in the street. So I'm not too sure what these people think. The IMF gave Jordan a loan. Yes, I said the IMF gave Jordan a loan for $2 billion to take care of their, wait for it, $5 billion deficit. So there's a big difference.
That math doesn't work.
Yeah, it works if you raise prices on everybody. Anyway, you know, I didn't mean to go.
No, it's hard. It's hard not to see them having that little streak of Malthusianism in them.
Well, anyway, so that's what's going on in Jordan. And Jordan's important because that's also home to, I don't know how many hundreds of thousands of right of return Palestinians, right?
Yeah, who would like to go home.
So, I mean, you know, it's an absolute mess there. So, I don't know. And by the way, is the PLO going to try to get observer status at the UN at the end of the month? What happened to that story?
Oh, yeah, that's right.
So keep your eye on that bullshit because Netanyahu is about to, you know, chew off his hand before he lets that happen. So that's all part of this, too.
And we ain't even to December yet.
Oh, I know. Well, anyway, listen, I'm not going to go on. I'm boring myself. But listen,
you're not boring me, but go ahead.
No, but I know you're feeling sick because I'm about to transition into the shallow. Notre Dame, ew, I can't deal. Cannot believe it.
Yeah, but you got to remember that in addition to being a Mountaineer fan, Sandra, I am an Alabama fan. And while I try not to believe in supernatural forces at work... in light of the fact that Alabama lost to Texas A&M and is the most and would therefore and but would be the most likely one loss candidate to play a no loss Notre Dame, there was something I was responding to on Facebook earlier today about religion, and I pointed out the fact that it would take some if you're into the divine intervention game. You could almost argue that Bear Bryant was up there doing some divine intervention, making sure that Alabama got a shot at Notre Dame, because nobody, I mean nobody, hates Notre Dame more than an Alabama fan.
Well, you know,
lo and behold, Kansas State going down, Oregon going down, Alabama versus Notre Dame if Alabama can win out.
Well, listen, No. I'm not a big USC fan. In fact, I hate them. But it's going to be Lane Kiffin all day, every day. Okay? So I'll be watching that game for real.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And I'll be hoping and praying because...
Oh, yeah. I'm going to be a USC fan that night, too.
Oh, God. You know.
UCLA did to them was not inspiring if you're hoping for a USC beatdown on Notre Dame.
I know, but I did enjoy that, though. You know, public versus private. You always have to go with the UC. Shit.
Oh, yeah. Oh, no. I was UCLA all the way on that.
But at this point in time,
the only thing I've got going for me here is the really serious open question of whether or not my Mountaineers will so much as qualify for the Tidy Bowl.
Right. I mean, they really went off since cliff is the new word, they really went off the cliff. What happened?
They didn't just... They went Thelma and Louise. The first few games exposed the fact that they had no defense. I mean, when you beat Baylor 70-63 with a last-minute touchdown, you know. But they've got no defense. And after a while, that got inside the offense's head.
and then the high-powered offense couldn't even do its job. But the high-powered offense in the last couple of games has kind of gotten back on its feet. But the guy who is tasked with creating a defense at West Virginia University has never been a defensive coordinator before in any college program.
Hmm.
And he's a pal of the head coach, Dana Holgorsen. And Holgorsen is an offensive genius, and offense is what Dana Holgorsen thinks about.
Right.
So, you know, defense is kind of an afterthought. And he figured, you know, if we can score if we can score 50 points a game, we can beat anybody. Not if there's not a defense on the field. That Oklahoma game this past Saturday was heartrending.
Do they have another game left?
Yeah, they got two games left.
Two, okay.
Yeah, Thursday night against Iowa State, and then they come home to face Kansas. And they may very well have to beat Kansas to get that sixth win and become bowl eligible after starting off, you know, 5-0.
Well, anyway, I mean, I suppose that that national championship game you're talking about, wow, that would be well entertaining if Notre Dame got pounded into the ground by Alabama.
Yeah, see, that little run game Notre Dame has is not going to play against the Bama D.
I just think that it's, you know,
it took that Johnny football kid at Texas A&M to show him up and expose him. But you get to do that once in a year to a team like Alabama, not twice.
But every week I keep thinking this team, Notre Dame's going to lose, and they haven't. And I'm like, oh, come on, it can't be that deep. So, yeah.
Well, no, I mean, if that's the way it shakes out, if Alabama plays, Alabama plays Notre Dame for the mythical national championship, Sandra, I'm kind of holding you to it. Sometime a day or two before the game, I'm going to need a big Roll Tide from you.
Oh, you know what? I don't know. I'm not going to hold myself to that. Maybe. That's hilarious. But God, that's a really interesting development, all that went down, for them to be in the position that they're in. I don't mean
that. Well, because they were number four, and, you know, there goes number one and number two. Boom, three goes up. One and two have to fall below.
Right.
Because, you know, Alabama lost to A&M and a really, really sharp quarterback, whatever you say. But about the rest of A&M, you know, they blow leads, stuff like that. But the fact of the matter is, Kansas State lost to a team that another team they beat, West Virginia, and beat badly, And didn't lose close. You know, we lost to Oklahoma by a point this Saturday. Mm. But Kansas State lost big to Baylor.
And that always plays into it too, right? The sort of
right. And Oregon, Oregon, whose every game had been a track meet, suddenly ran up against a wall of Cardinal.
Shocking, that was shocking.
And so, in a way, I think in the polls, you kind of get punished for not behaving like a championship-caliber team. And the later you lose in the season, the worse it hurts.
Yeah, the worse it is. Oh, yeah, no, that makes sense. Well, anyway, I mean, you know, it should be interesting to see how it all shakes out.
Right, but for Alabama, there's still Auburn to get past, and then there's...
Wow,
although you'll get a kick out of this, after all the secession petitions at the White House petition site, it was nice to see a southern state finally filing a serious petition. Auburn fans filed a petition calling for Barack Obama to order a drone strike on the Auburn head coach. Auburn fans called for that.
Oh, these people, they sick in the head. My goodness.
Yeah. I mean, it is a world down there that is hard for people outside to contemplate. I mean, remember a couple of years ago, a jackass Alabama fan went and poisoned the tree at Tillman's Corners at Auburn and then called a radio sports call-in talk show to brag about it.
Wouldn't they put that asshole on trial recently, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, no. But the only other sports story that had me rolling was, you know, for our... Canadian friends, the sex toys and lingeries are selling off the out of the store because there's no hockey.
I saw a reference to that.
I was laughing. I said, oh, my God. So, I mean, have they canceled the whole season?
I don't know. I mean, it's a lockout, right, for all intents and
purposes. Right, it's another lockout, yeah.
It's like the NHL owners are hell and be damned that they are going to destroy professional hockey or die trying.
Well, they often do. They always are sort of shooting themselves in the foot.
I mean, the baseball owners are goofy.
No, they learned their damn lesson.
The NFL owners, with the lockout of the referees, they're stupid. The NBA owners are just pig-eyed, greedy little monsters. But when it comes to just off-the-rails nuts, I mean, a sport that has probably the most loyal fans on the planet.
And it was getting more fans, you know?
Yeah, it grows. You know, a Southerner will root for, will get interested in any sport. I mean, there was the NHL growing like crazy in a place like Nashville.
Well,
these guys can't. I mean, it's like they've got a gun and a goose that lays the golden egg, and they just you got to go, goose. I mean, you know.
Yeah, no, it's crazy. So I just thought that was that made me laugh. I thought, oh my God, and
But sex toys and lingerie sales are up.
Up, yes.
And
so.
And I mean, not little tick in the market up.
Oh, God. Yeah. Anyway, so you know they're stupid. I don't know what else to say about them.
Well, apparently Marty out in your neck of the woods is going to be a USC fan this Saturday too.
Oh yes, okay, I'm sure.
And ooh. Ray, even though he has moved away from his beloved Michigan down to the warmer climes of Florida, is still suffering. He says it is so hard being a Lions fan. They still suck. You know, every 15 years or so they'll tease you and look like, you know, maybe they're, you know, because they did that last year and then this year.
Yeah, no, it seems to me. I mean, yeah. What was the other game that I was laughing at? Of course, you know, it never gets old. Dallas, that never gets old. I mean, I'm just like, wow, you know. Yep, you know, it's
Jerry,
a tragedy.
Jerry Jones, he's the NFL's version of a Jonah. Yeah, if the Cowboys ever figure out a way, there's, you know, a coup or something to toss him overboard, things will get well again.
Yeah, you know.
But he's but you know, you started up this string of emails, Marty noting, no, they haven't canceled the NHL season yet. However, it's getting to the brink. He says this from an American-born San Jose Sharks fan. I miss my Sharks, though giving the LA Kings a very short season to display the Stanley Cup bothers me.
Well, no, listen, and you know, Shark fans, they are fanatical. That ain't no joke. They love it in San Jose. Yeah. Yep.
And then poor, you know, poor Fritz down in Arkansas just suffering. He says at least West WVU isn't playing nearly every game at 11:30 a.m. this season. The University of Louisiana Monroe loss game two of the Razorback season exposed them, although there were warning signs against Jacksonville, South Carolina, coached by another god-awful ex-Hog coach, Jack Crow. God certainly is a god of irony, even with college football.
Oh,
and
no.
Then he asks, is a 35-point spread big enough for the LSU game? God, that's just sad. Yeah, the Razorbacks hired John L. Smith, formerly of Michigan State, who said, I'll do this for one season. And Razorbacks fans are going, we might have signed you on for too long, brother. So there's a lot of weeping and wailing and gnashing of teeth.
It's been such a bizarre season. What's happening? I haven't paid attention. But what's happening with, you know, the cheating ass Ohio State people? Isaac notwithstanding, but anyway.
and Guy James, yeah. They won in overtime against Wisconsin this weekend. So, you know, a little bit of happiness, but. There they are in the hunt for the Big Ten.
Well, anyway, I suppose.
But you know, the other side of that, though, is that the Big Ten's looking to expand now. And I got this sort of horrified email from Tosh, who said, really? Maryland? The University of Maryland? In the Big Ten? Maryland? That founded the ACC? Really?
Well, so, why? There's no sort of geographical concerns anymore. It's just whatever.
Hey, WVU's a part of the Big 12. We play in Lubbock now, please.
Anyway, no, I don't. You listen, I really don't know.
College Station, Texas plays in the SEC. You know, Nebraska plays in the Big Ten. I guess that makes maybe a little bit of sense. But meanwhile, guess who doesn't play in the Big Ten? Notre Dame. You know, if there's ever going to be any sense at all to college football, it kind of has to begin with Notre Dame giving up its little NBC contract and playing a real schedule inside a conference, and instead of getting the sweetheart treatment that it gets. One of the only reasons that Notre Dame is number one is because they don't play inside of a conference, because these big, serious college conferences eat each other alive. I mean, the Southeastern Conference beats the snot out of itself. I mean, Jesus, Georgia that got its doors blown off by who? LSU is the champion of the SEC East, and they're a one-loss team, and if they beat Alabama, could lay a claim to play Notre Dame if Notre Dame remains unbeaten? Now, the other side of that, without getting too incredibly dull, is that if Notre Dame does lose to USC, then all bets are off, because everybody's a one-loss team at that point. The playoff system that comes in next season, everybody will be going, yeah, this was the right idea. Yeah, definitely. Because you're gonna have 2 1-loss teams playing for the mythic national championship, and the other 3 or 4 or 5 1-loss teams are going, well, wait a minute! And nothing to do but pound sand.
I guess that's probably enough.
Yeah, people can at least be grateful that we're not NASCAR fans.
Oh God, didn't know anything about it. Not a... Okay, listen, have a good evening.
Yeah, you too, Sandra. Take care.
Bye.
Bye now. Our good buddy Sandra calling from California on the Skype line. If you've never tried the calling into the program via Skype, it's easy enough done. Our Skype account here is Bob Kincaid Horn, BobKincaidHorn. Bob Kincaid Horn. Email coming in on the far more serious topic of the Israeli slaughter of Gaza. Andy writing under the subject line, Assassination of Ahmed al-Jabri. Israel started this recent altercation by breaking a truce by assassinating Ahmed al-Jabri, Gaza head of defense, working on a peace accord with who else? Israel. Israel is the biggest threat to our nation and peace in the world. When you have 69% of the Jews in the United States voting Democratic in the last election, and Representative Debbie Wasserman Schultz, DNC chair, along with Mayor Rahm Emanuel, calling the shots in the Obama administration in public, we'll hear nothing but unwavering support for our strongest ally, not. All that matters to Benji Netanyahu is getting the land to expand the Zionist theocratic experiment. And Andy doesn't use the word theocratic lightly or inaccurately. You know, we have such a hissy in America every time there's a picture of, an Afghan woman in a burqa or a Saudi woman in full chadar. Is that what it's called? But we never seem to notice that there are places that in Israel, women enjoy, in many instances, second-class citizenship. You know, back-of-the-bus stuff. But we can't talk about that, can we? You know, Islam is not the only religion that has a lock on theocracy.
Sandra conjured up Isaac. Isaac said, "Hey, I went to the Ohio State University. Don't knock it. They had great drugs." "But I went to WVU, and we were number one party school in the nation. Come on." Now, of course, the regular, ordinary, plain, vanilla phone line is open as well. That number, of course, is 304-658-3333, and you are welcome to use that or the Skype line, Bob Kincaid Horn, to get involved with the program, to say your piece, to speak your mind, to nominate a Moran for Moran Monday. You know, it might be possible to nominate Bibi Netanyahu, except for the fact that he's more murderer than Moran. But you might find this interesting. Isaac sent this along after Sandra mentioned it. It's 2.5 minutes of audio. And this is the exchange that Sandra described between a reporter for the Associated Press and State Department spokesperson Victoria Nuland, badgering Victoria Nuland over the fact that Turkey dared to criticize Israel.
"You say that it would not be helpful for you to discuss any of your conversations, that quiet diplomacy is the way to de-escalate that. Well, you've been doing your quiet diplomacy now for almost a week. How's it going so far?"
What a disrespectful prick. Now, you've got a female in the role of spokesperson. And you've got this snotty-ass AP reporter who can't even ask a straight question. Listen to the tone of voice. The snide quality of it. This isn't a question so much as an editorial statement.
"Say that it would not be helpful for you to discuss any of your conversations, that quiet diplomacy is the way to de-escalate that. Well, you've been doing your quiet diplomacy now for almost a week."
Your quiet diplomacy. There is a way to ask hard questions without coming across as some sort of snarky-ass white winger, which Matthew Lee of the Associated Press sounds like he is.
"How's it going so far?"
How's it going so far? Now, I give credit to Victoria Nuland for not saying, "You want to try asking that with a little bit of respect in your voice, Bubba?" Oh, shit, I said Bubba.
We are working hard with the parties. We're working hard with...
"Have you heard anybody that maybe being less quiet might get more results?"
Oh, I see. He's an expert, not an AP reporter. The woman tries to answer the question. Victoria Nuland attempts to begin an answer to the question, but before she can even get to a damn verb, ace AP reporter Matthew Lee is on her like a duck on a June bug, because he's going to tell her where she and the State Department are wrong. The jackass.
"How's it going so far?"
We are working hard with the parties. "We're working hard with..."
"Have you heard anybody that maybe being less quiet might get more results? The squeaky wheel gets grease, that kind of thing?"
"I'll let the...
You're staying silent while people are dying left and right."
Matthew Lee? The people who are mostly dying left and right are 3-year-old Palestinian babies. Unless the rest of this, the tenor and content of the rest of this is going to change dramatically, let's find out.
"Matt, we are being far from silent. The president
is telling us anything about what you're... When the Turks come out, when the leaders of Turkey come out and say that Israel is engaged in acts of terrorism, and you refuse to say that you don't agree with that, or maybe you do agree with it, that's being silent."
See, he's a white male. That means he's smarter
than any other female on the planet? God, this is sickening. What does he think he's on thinks he's on Press the Meat with Disco Dave? As an aside, you know, I take my family to the movies about once every 100 years. Actually, it's about once a year. And this year's movie was, by vote of the family, that vampire movie that's come out that everybody's so... The Twilight Breaking Wind, something like that. And so they wanted to go see that. I made sure we went in the afternoon because it's cheaper. And I just looked at him and said, you know, I'm glad you want to see it. I want to make you happy. That's cool. Enjoy the movie. I ain't going. And then I walked over and bought a ticket to see Lincoln. It was either Lincoln, Skyfall, or Flight. And I trust Denzel Washington to be part of entertaining films. But there was something, well, yeah, I'm a history nerd. I knew I was either going to go into Lincoln and come out screaming, because it's a Spielberg picture. I knew I was either going to come out screaming or come out just blown away. That's probably the wrong phrase to use with a movie called Lincoln. But I definitely came out the latter. Stunned. What a magnificent film. What a beautiful film. Bob, why in the hell are you talking about this in the middle of a clip from the AP reporter being shitty to the spokesman for the United States State Department? Why are you doing that, Bob? For a reason. I don't just do things. Quick, what movie did that come from? The whole movie is magnificent. You're in the theater for maybe, you know, maybe the film's been rolling a couple of minutes before you're convinced that you are actually watching some sort of time travel experience in which you are actually looking at Abraham Lincoln. In which Sally Field actually is Mary Todd Lincoln. In which David Strathern, what an actor, really is Secretary of State Seward. Everything was spot on. Just, you know, cancel the Academy Awards. Just give all the statues to whoever did what with Lincoln and have done with it. It may very well be the best film I've ever seen, ever. But no, there's a larger point here. The scenes in the, of debate inside the House of Representatives are a movie within themselves. And there is one telling moment, and there's no spoiler involved here. The whole movie centers on the debate around the House's passage of the 13th Amendment so it could be sent out to the states for ratification. Everybody knows that. And so, obviously, there's going to have to be some debate scenes. A great deal of the debate turns on the question of what the 13th Amendment actually means. Is it a philosophical statement that brown people are just the same as white people? And the U.S. House of Representatives was sharply divided over this, including one Fernando Wood of New York, who at one point had suggested that the city of New York secede from the Union so as to continue doing business with the Confederacy. All of that is an aside. Within that equality debate, there is a subsection
regarding what equality means. And the question is put, what does this mean? Does it mean that the Negro shall have the vote? Says the House of Representatives. Followed by, where then does it end? Universal suffrage? Shall the woman be given the vote? At which point, the whole House of Representatives fairly erupts into chaos. I mean, you know, bad enough we want to give them the vote, but my God, the vagina people voting? Are you out of your blue mind? Really? And that is part and parcel of why women's suffrage, why it took longer to give women the vote than it did to give former slaves. And I mention all that because that is, you know, here it is, it's the 19th day of November, 2012. And it's still on display in the form of a smart-ass AP reporter verbally accosting a spokesperson for the State Department who happens to be female. Jesus!
When the leaders of Turkey come out and say that Israel is engaged in acts of terrorism, and you refuse to say that you don't agree with that, or maybe you do agree with it, that's being silent.
Matt, we have made a decision that we need to engage in our diplomatic work diplomatically. We have been very, very clear about where we stand on this,
which is that we don't practice diplomacy from the podium.
We have been very clear that Israel has a right of self-defense. We've been very clear that rockets continue to be fired.
But, of course, Gaza and the Palestinians do not have a right of self-defense. If Israel sends ground troops, those 75,000 reservists they've called up to knock the rust off of, sends ground troops into Gaza, the peoples whose home they are invading do not have a right to self-defense. Moreover, it should be noted that they have not had a right to self-defense when an act of ongoing war crime, the blockading of a civilian population, has gone on and on and on, and even hapless, peaceful, kumbaya-singing aid ships have been stopped with Israeli gunboats putting their sights on them and arresting the people aboard for wanting to do no more than deliver humanitarian aid desperately needed in the occupied territories of Palestinian Gaza. The embargoed, the blockaded civilian population. They have no airport. They have no major means of ingress. They have no dock. And yet they sit on the sea. And even when the bombs aren't falling, even when the artillery isn't booming, they die, and they die, and they die, and they die, and they die. Not of gunshot wounds. Not of shrapnel. Not because they were roasted alive by Israeli white phosphorus weapons, but because they've got an infection and no antibiotics. Because they've got cancer and no chemo. Because they can't get medical attention for a heart attack. But Israel has a right of self-defense.
and on Israel. We've been very clear that we are working to try to get this conflict de-escalated. We have been very clear about our concern for the civilians and innocents on both sides who are getting cut in this.
You won't stick up for your ally Israel when the Turks, another one of your allies, say that they're engaged in terrorism in Gaza.
We have.
I'm glad Sandra mentioned this. This is disgusting. This guy is sitting there, Matthew Lee, hotshot Johnny on the spot, ace for-profit media reporter for the Associated Press, lecturing the State Department because it has not been sufficiently obsequious to crimes against humanity as committed by Israel.
Been extremely clear about our concern for Israel's security, about the fact that Israel has a right to self-defense, but I am not going to go further than that.
Why can't you say that you don't agree with the Turks?
Why are you insisting on it? Who's writing your check? Who signs it every 2 weeks, Matthew Lee? Is the only check you get the one that comes from the Associated Press? Damn. I mean, this guy sounds like a propaganda plant, doesn't he? Ah, the Israelis would never do that. We're their best bosom buddy. No need to plant propaganda inside, except, well.
Because I'm not going to get into a public spitting match with allies on either side. We're just not going to do that.
And
okay?
Do you think that that's worse? A public spitting match with one of your allies is worse than hundreds of people dying every day?
What? If Matthew Lee's concern was about hundreds of people dying every day, one could conceivably argue that he would be suggesting that we should agree with the Turks that Israel is, in fact, engaging in terrorism against the civilian population of Gaza. Which, you know, incidentally, they are. I like Sandra's phrase. They got some broke-ass rockets. No way of guiding them, no way of pinpointing them, but there's Israel with pinpoint munitions that just happened to take out a 3-month little boy named Mishrawi.
I don't understand the question here. There's not a question here. You're just looking for a fight. Let's go, Saeed.
No. The fight is already on.
Yeah,
the fight's going
absolutely.
On over there.
Absolutely.
And you guys, by refusing to say anything about what you're trying to do, or refusing to say whether you agree or disagree with comments that are being made by your allies or others, that makes things worse, not better.
We, of course...
Wait. Pronoun troubles. Did he just give something away? Let's go back. Let's go back a minute. This thing's almost over.
Made by your allies or...
Your allies. What's your nationality, Matthew Lee? What is the government of the United States? Hint. Go look at the preamble of the Constitution of the United States. We, the people, in order to, you know. Right? Your allies? Wouldn't they be, like it or not, our allies? Matthew Lee?
Johnny on the Spot, Associated Press reporter, wouldn't they be our allies?
Others. That makes things worse, not better.
We, of course, agree that rhetorical attacks against Israel are not helpful at this moment. Is that what you were looking for, Matt?
Yes.
Thank you.
No, Matt's looking for a job. Matt would like to be, apparently, Secretary of State. Dear God. Marty writing in, I'll say it again, broke-ass rockets that we don't even know that the Palestinians are actually firing them. Is such a conspiracy theory that the Mossad hasn't been running their own version of Operation Northwoods? Dunno. Yeah, I did know that, Isaac. Because of Lincoln, that's the reason the U.S. celebrates Thanksgiving. Ron and Raleigh noting, because, you know, it's kind of a dual topic here, because of my little digression. From what I hear, it'll be Denzel versus Daniel Day-Lewis for the Best Actor statuette. I guess I'm biased, at least until I see Flight, which we'll have to wait till it comes out on video. Let's go to the phones. You know the number, 304-658-3333. Chime right in, or Bob Kincaid Horn on Skype. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob?
Yes.
This is Edward in Dallas.
How you doing, Edward?
I'm doing pretty good. You were talking about Israel, and it reminded me of my grandmother. In World War II, Germans were sneaking out around Cape Hatteras, around there, and shooting torpedoes at the boats and sinking them. And so they started building all of these bases there: Camp Lejeune, Cherry Point, Bogue Field, Atlantic Field. But there weren't any hotels or motels or anything. They had no place for these guys to stay that were building all these things. So they asked the people down there if they would open up their homes and let these guys stay there. And my grandmother did. And upstairs there were four bedrooms, and there were four beds. And there were two men in each bed. She also cooked breakfast for them, made their lunch for them to take with them, and then cooked supper for them. And I met the first Jewish person in my life there, and I'll never forget his name. It was Kopeloff. And I think he came from New York. But anyway, I also wanted to tell you about the Gulf of Mexico. We have a friend who used to have a house down there on the Gulf, on the Bolivar Peninsula. In fact, his house was on Pottings, and you parked your car under the house, and then upstairs you'd sit out on the deck, and there was only one thing between you and the Gulf of Mexico, and that was sand. So I decided I wanted to go swimming. So I did. And this was at least 25 years ago, and there were these terrible jellyfish. They called them cabbage heads. They were about the size of a soccer ball, and they'd bang up against you and everything, and so I decided I didn't particularly care for that.
And sting the fire out of you, too, I'll bet.
Yeah. Well, they didn't bother me, but they did some of my friends. I evidently was not allergic to them. But anyhow, I went up, and my friend said, well, here, you're going to have to get all this off your legs and everything. I look down, and I'm a blonde. I was born a blonde, and I'll probably die one. Unless I change my hair color. But nevertheless...
Only your hairdresser will know for sure.
That's right. That's right. They will only know for sure. And I washed my legs off. The hairs on my legs were dark brown. All this stuff had stuck onto them. And my feet had this tar on them. And I'd noticed on the beach, you step down, and this black stuff would squish up between your toes. And that was 25 or 30 years ago. And all this stuff about it's just happening now, that's a crock. It was happening then. I never went in the Gulf again. Never.
Well, I've experienced some of that, the jellyfish part especially. But you know, the tar balls have been washing up on the beaches of the Gulf for decades, if not, well, for as long as anybody's been fooling with oil out there.
Yeah, well, so you could sit up.
But if you've got it, but if I understand your point, Edward, and I think I do. If that's something approaching a state of nature, why would you want to make it worse?
Well, why?
And of course, the answer is always because there's money involved.
It's like that old patter song from play Cabaret. Money, 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 money.
Bingo.
It makes the world go round. That clicking, clacking sound. So,
exactly.
Anyway, that's all I wanted to say and tell you about my my friend, the first Jewish person I ever met. His name was Kopeloff, and I was so blonde I was almost translucent. He wasn't. He was rather dark-skinned, which I thought was rather nice, because I always wanted to have dark skin. I hated being so white.
Well, the sun, that neck of the woods, the sun burns in the summer enough to give you pause for reflection.
You're telling me.
I've been roasted to the point that my whole, you know, well, I mean, there are photos out there of me after 3 hours in the Caribbean sun on Grand Turk Island. I looked like Captain Christopher Pike from that first episode of Star Trek. I just looked like I'd been flash fried.
Oh, well, I got sunburned so bad one time when my when the skin finally started coming off, I could just take it up from my shoulder and just pull it off down over my arm. It would go rip. Oh, my God.
Yeah, it's like peeling. Yeah, it's like holding a piece of parchment.
You're telling me?
I'm so gross. I'm so gross. I looked at it under a microscope one time just to see the cell structure.
Oh, it was sort of human vellum.
Yeah, you can prepare a microscope slide and put a little drop of iodine on it. See, even that I had to darken up to make it visible.
You know, we're being very bad.
Well, no, I mean I am. I'm so darn pale. I burn under the refrigerator bulb, Edward. It's a fact.
Oh, please, I do the same thing. Same thing. Well, you all take care.
You have a good night, Edward.
About those tar balls down there at Galveston.
I appreciate it. You have
take
a good
care.
Night. Bye now.
Bye.
Edward calling from Dallas. Jeremy up in Vermont pointing out that those big old jellyfish can also be known perhaps as man of war, Portuguese man of war, men of war. Pretty bad and kill people in the Gulf from time to time. Yeah, seen them too. But no, there are some jellyfish that I know a man of war. It's got that big crenellated head and the top, and looks almost like a shellfish of sorts. But no, in that part of the Gulf that Edward's talking about, these are just great, goddamn big, regular jellyfish. They grow to huge proportions. I'd never heard them called cabbage heads before. Yeah, Marty, thanks a million. I'll take that advice someday. Not. You should have marinated yourself with some coconut rum. And who's saying I didn't? Huh? It is about 25 minutes past the hour. I want to go to one other. This is Moran Monday, and like I said, it's a judgment call from one story to the next. Not quite Thanksgiving. Here's hoping that on the so-called Black Friday, no one will get trampled to death or shot at any big box stores. Here's hoping that, and I have no doubt where the Horn family is concerned that this is true, that people will stay away from big box stores on so-called Black Friday. And as often as possible, frankly. You know that there is a labor work action on against Walmart. God knows that's been long enough coming. But no, Thanksgiving also marks the beginning of what we traditionally refer to as the holiday season. Because it marks about a month before the winter solstice. The winter solstice being a time when humans, from time immemorial, have chosen to mark the shortest day of the year and the inexorable increase in daylight that comes minutely but relentlessly with every day following until we get to the summer solstice, the longest day of the year, another ancient pagan holiday. But we know, of course, that fledgling religion known as Christianity had to find a way to stop people from having fun. So they said, no, this is not the Saturnalia. This is not that festival when for one day a year the masters of the house allow the servants to be the masters and they themselves become the servants. No. That's just way too much jocularity. This is Jesus' birthday. Cue that audio from the old Frosty the Snowman animated holiday special. Happy birthday! It's Jesus' birthday. And so I guess we are late. I was kind of beginning to actually hope we wouldn't have to deal with it this year for the war on Christmas. But there you go. Hope in one hand and in another and see which one fills up first. I should have known better. This is one of those judgment calls. Moran Monday or prayer meeting Wednesday. Ultimately, I decided it's Moran Monday material because of the quotient of moranity, the content of moranity involved.
Well, Christmas all over again. The Grinch is trying to steal our holiday. It's been so beautiful, the nation.
Really? Because I missed it. Are there not sufficient amounts of the artificial mistletoe and holly around the bras and garter belts and thongs at Victoria's Secret? Has Macy's not gotten their annual sheets and pillowcases sale festooned with enough fur-bedecked red trim? For the former liquor supply officer, Pat Robertson, are there not enough
holiday gift-giving special commemorative Johnny Walker sets out there? You know, with the little etched glasses? Are we not? Have we not? I guess there hasn't been sufficient commercialization of Jesus' birthday.
It's all over again. The Grinch is trying to steal our holiday. It's been so beautiful. The nation comes together. We sing Christmas carols.
Wait, Pat. The nation comes together? Well, 51% of the nation came together the first week of November and rejected a guy whose religion says that Jesus is the brother of Lucifer. The guy who derided the 47% of Americans who, you know, think that America, they need gifts, got 47% of the vote. We found out who the real 47% are. Oh, no, that's not what he's talking about, I'm sure.
Beautiful. The nation comes together. We sing Christmas carols. We give gifts to each other. We have lighted trees, and it's just a beautiful thing.
Lieutenant Robertson, those lighted trees. You know they have nothing to do with your Jesus, right? It's another co-option. The lighted trees go back to the same tradition that gives us the Yule log. Also, curiously pagan.
The lighted trees, and it's just a beautiful thing. Atheists don't like our happiness. They don't want you to be happy. They want you to be miserable. Well, they're
Wait. Atheists don't want you to be happy. Excuse me? I'm not aware of atheists having a creed that says that this place is a vale of tears. That this is a miserable, sin-begotten place. And that the best we can hope for is to hurry up and die so we can have some pie in the sky when we die. And walk around on streets of 24-karat gold and go through gates made out of pearls and... Yeah. What's all this happiness business? For heaven's sakes. A lot of atheists listen to this program. A lot of agnostics, a lot of free thinkers, a lot of people who don't acknowledge the Christian religion as the only way to have some sort of an afterlife. There's people that believe in afterlives here. There's some Christians that listen. But they generally don't tend to be the religion industry fundamentalist evangelical types. We're miserable. Old Pat's never seen a bunch of atheists sampling the eggnog. It can get right festive. Email question from Ray. Is he short of cash being donated to him because it's Jesus' made-up birthday? Nope. The pig still got that money rolling in. He cares enough to share it? Nope. Cash for Jesus? Good. Cash for God's creatures? Not so good. Randall writing in, springtime for Jesus and America. Da-da-da-da. Yeah, I won't sing anymore on the program either. I don't know. I don't know if Big Lots is a big box store or not, Marty. I don't know. Marty says, I've been saying all along, if they choose to keep complaining about the war on Christmas, we should give them one. Now, Marty, that'll cost you. That's going to cost you at least three choruses of Kumbaya and one good tambourine shake. Ron and Raleigh noting, hey, Bob, the war on Christmas, like the war on drugs and unlike the war on poverty, is just too good to give up. The religion industry will ride this tired old nag till you and I are but a faded memory. By the way, Bob, who is this good King Wenceslas, and what is the Feast of Stephen? Marty, I thought the song went, I'd rather laugh with the sinners than cry with the saints. Ooh, Billy Joel reference tonight. But we're not done with Brother Pat, miserable atheist.
We give gifts to each other. We have lighted trees, and it's just a beautiful thing. Atheists don't like our happiness. They don't want you to be happy. They want you to be miserable. They're miserable, so they want you to be miserable. So they want to steal your holiday away from you.
Stealing. They want to steal Christmas and hide it away somewhere where you can't get to it. Maybe not till, like, March or something, and that'll ruin Easter. Thanks to our dear, dear friends at Right Wing Watch, who have to watch so much really miserable, crazy crap just to do their jobs. Loonies. But one more of these, just because it's not just Christmas we're after. It's the whole bloomin' religion. We're just out to destroy Christianity, you know, just like that there Nero, right? That's the word. From, what are they? Did I get this right? The Cornwall Institute? Now, of course, the tired, very tired old computer, not funded by George Soros, has decided not to cooperate. Well, maybe we'll get back to these Looney Tunes. Let's go first to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi, Bob. How are you? Good evening.
I'm well, thank you.
Great, great. This is your buddy, your twerking buddy.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. Twerking. Isaac?
This is Isaac.
Yeah, I thought so. Yeah, I was so not ready. I was so not ready for twerking.
Yeah, I know you was. I know you wasn't.
And shame on me for looking it up in Urban Dictionary.
I know,
did you see? Oh God. Yeah, but no. Awful good to hear from you. This is a rarity.
Yes, it is. I normally don't call radio shows, but I decided to do it, and because you know one of the things I find very interesting with your show, Bob. And first of all, I want to let you know personally, I enjoy your show.
Thank you.
I really do. And try to contribute as much as I can, as you can tell, with the emails that we go back and forth on.
Oh, yeah, every day. Oh, my God. You don't know what you do to me some days.
Well, you know, I think our family's really missing out on all the fun that you and I and Sandra have on the internet, as they call it.
Yes.
It's a lot of fun. But the reason why I call Bob, religion, as you know, my position on it too is the same as yours. I may be a little bit more deeper in it too, against it, but I'm just amazed of these people out here, the way they think. And there's a question that I wanted to ask you, and I always wonder, What was it for you that made you wake up and realize that these people are fucking crazy?
Well, Isaac, they are the best evidence against them. But what made me? I don't know. I don't know if there was a. Pardon the allegory. I don't know if there was a road to Damascus moment for me. But you know, there were just little things from the time I was a child, and I'm discovering them still. That let me know that most of this is BS. Going back to that thing about, you know, from the time I was a child, when you're a member of one Christian Protestant faith and there's another Christian Protestant faith over here that freely says, and by over here I mean, you know, a couple of blocks away, that says that your Christian faith is going to the eternal satanic barbecue because you've got a piano in the sanctuary. That's a clue. But then when you, but I guess if there was really, since we're, like Sandra said, we're talking about cliffs these days, if there was an over the cliff moment for me, it was when I had a good professor who actually laid out the history of Christianity. And I understood that it was a human construct, that these were decisions made by men, and I mean men, not generically man, but men, and not by God. And then began to look around at all the other religions and found the same thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, you know, what baffles me is, you know, I can see a little kid, you know, believing in it. And this is between you and I and the Horn people. I hope I'm not offending anyone, but it just really baffles me when I sit and talk to a grown adult. And when they're talking about, you know, talking snakes, one thing I like to do to mess with them too, the really heavy Christian people out there, you know, when they talk about the Bible is literal and everything is the truth and it's the word, and what gets them, when I always pose this question to them, why did your God give man nipples? And not one has been able to answer me that question.
Oh, and that's not at all surprising, any more than they can answer why did a loving God create the tsetse fly or the what's it called? The guinea worm. Grr. Nasty, nasty things. Or the bed bug. Or the flea. Or the louse. Were those put... And everything from nipples to lice, is that all Satan's business? And if Satan put them here, why did the all-powerful God let them?
Oh, and I heard a great one the other day, too, from a religious idiot. It makes no sense to me, but he stated that the book of Job is the oldest book in the Bible. And I'm still trying to get that wrapped around my head. And so I decided to do a little Google research on it. And there's a small sector of these hardcore religious people that are stating this. And I'm like, how did they even come up with this? How did they comprehend this? I mean, someone tells them this and they just go and run with it? Because I thought Genesis, you know, doesn't it say in the beginning in Genesis?
Yeah.
So how can the book of
Job... Well, I mean, there's no book of Job in the Torah. Texas Betsy would be the first one to tell us that.
Yeah.
I mean, and again, one of the problems you run across is that the Old Testament, the Jewish mythology, the Hebrew mythology, was co-opted by a bunch of people. It is as if you, it's like any filter. The Old Testament was literally filtered through the classical Greek mindset, Isaac. And so it takes on a different meaning from somewhere between point A and point B. And so you get people saying crazy crap like that. If I recall my history correctly, we kind of know when Job was written. And, you know, Job, of course, is the biggest BS, there's, it's fascinating to study, but it's the biggest BS explanation. Well, it's basically the same explanation exists in Job that you get from a lot of these right-wing evangelical fundies if you ask them about lice or guinea worms or tsetse flies or nipples on men. No one knows the wondrous and majestic ways of God.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, which is just a giant, okay, it's third down, it's third in the yard, we're going to punt.
Yeah. And technically, I think you might have stated this too in the past, but technically, Adam supposedly was the first man to give birth, correct?
Right. You know, right through his side, Eve sort of dodged the spleen, and you know, and of course that is tied up in the overthrow. At least, you know, some sociologists, I think, there I go being all fox-like, would argue that that's a myth that's all tied up in the creation of a patriarchal hierarchy in order to suppress the natural so-called feminine mystique of life-giving. Oh, no. The first woman came from Adam, got made out of a rib. Please.
And then you had the two boys, Cain and Abel.
Right. And who the hell did they marry?
Well, this is the Horn, and you know how I am, so...
Yeah.
I guess he was the first motherfucker, huh?
Yeah. Sure do got a pretty mouth.
But, I know an area that you live in, West Virginia, and, you know, I'm in Ohio. And I've been through West Virginia quite often.
And I have consumed several beers on High Street in Columbus, I might add.
Oh, okay, yeah. High Street. There's a lot, yeah, it's still hopping, still going on.
That was a long time ago.
Yeah, but... In West Virginia, and I've been through Bexley, too. As a matter of fact, when I used to travel to North Carolina, I used to stop in Bexley to get gas. And there's a Dairy Queen. I think it's off of 77, not too far from 77.
Type. Yeah, I know the one.
Yeah.
Harper Road.
Very interesting group of people there. I noticed that. Very, very interesting. But in reference to what you do, Bob, and you do a lot of great things, but on a religious aspect, too, of your knowledge... I know it's got to be very difficult because, I mean, the people that I see in West Virginia when I was there visiting, momentarily getting gas or eating at the Dairy Queen there, to get something to keep on heading down the road. I mean, it's like written over their face. I mean, like, hey, we are believers, and this is the way we believe things. And I know it's got to be very difficult for a person like you with your intellect to be in an environment like that, and that's what, you know, I'm in awe of that. You know, I really want to know, how do you do that? How do you stay sane?
Try to mind my own business. I'm fortunate to have the lovely Agnes by my side much of the time, Isaac, who, when I will look up and say, oh, there's... She'll be, shut up. You know, I want to live to see tomorrow. Because that is how it is. I mean, this is the home of the God said it, I believe it, that settles it bumper sticker. And the thing is, it is a, and I don't want to sound elitist or superior, it is a simple faith. It has to be one by definition, because this brutalized place, Isaac, is more absurd than anything Sartre could ever have conceived. Where a loving God makes sure that the only job you have is to go into a hole and come out with your lungs ruined at the end of a life, if you get to live it.
Mm-hmm.
Where mine blasts have killed, probably, you know, if you consider Central Appalachia and the coal industry, they've probably killed 100,000 people or more in 100 years. As it stands, even from black lung, which should be solvable in the 21st century, we lose 3 people a day to black lung. 4,000 West Virginians, innocent West Virginians, who have nothing to do with coal mining whatsoever, die because they simply live near mountaintop removal sites.
every year. You know, that's an Iraq war per year in Appalachia. And so you try to talk in turn, but I guess the other side of that is that if I have to, I can speak the language, and I'm not talking about necessarily starting to talk in tongues. I can, I mean, I was dipped by the heel in it. I can, and I studied it. I can quote Bible verses with the best of them. And I can make arguments from a biblical perspective that make sense within that, within that framework. Which comes in handy when they're sitting there saying, well, we had to go to a war in Iraq because Jesus told Peter that just to put up his sword. He didn't say to put it down. Didn't say to give it away to the poor. Never mind the fact that the next verse says, for those who live by the sword shall die by the sword. But the Southern Baptist Convention, I remember very well, Isaac, justified their support for the beginning of the Iraq War by saying, well, Peter had a sword. I mean, really, that's the depth of their theology. And but the other side of that coin is that, and it's apparently a multi-sided coin, I'm a religion nerd. I find it fascinating the same way that I find National Geographic fascinating. Because, there are things, you know, there are attempts inside, for instance, the Gospels, to convey a wholly different message. And it's very easy, as Thomas Jefferson did, to look at Yeshua, the brown-skinned Palestinian day laborer, as a really, really special individual who got killed for his trouble, who got killed for saying, and that's another thing. Texas Betsy and I were talking the other night. Most people don't know that do unto others as you would have them do unto you. In the Gospels, everybody thinks that there's something novel in that. Well, there was a brilliant Jewish scholar, a great rabbi. He's probably got a special name in Hebrew that I don't know, but he was named Hillel, and he died about 20 of the current era, which means that Yeshua was a young rising rabbi of about 20 years old when Hillel died. And Hillel was one of the dominant thinkers of that region in that age. And he lived something like from 60 BC to 20 of the current era. And in analyzing the law, the Torah, they said, you know, they asked him, what's the greatest commandment? And Hillel's answer was, don't do hateful things to other people if you don't want other people to do hateful things to you. The rest is commentary. Go study it. Which is exactly where Yeshua got do unto others as you would have them do unto you. You know, we could in many ways just as easily be worshiping Hillel, which would be equally offensive to Jewish theology. Men are not gods. Gods are not men. The Muslims seem to agree with that too. They find the idea that God would become human utterly offensive to the idea of being God at all. But most folks of simple faith are taught that all they have to do is believe in Jesus and everything else is okay. If they just believe, then, you know, whatever happens to them, they can say, thank God, never understanding or considering for a moment that in thanking God for preserving them, they're also thanking God for, you know, say, like, you know, the killer tornado. If you say, or you know, Sandy, if you say, thank God I'm alive, you're thanking God that somebody died instead of you. Mark Twain pointed that out in the war prayer. But that's past the understanding of most Christians.
Yeah, it is. It is. And they don't, and when you bring that up to their attention, they look at you, and then they tell you, I'm going to pray for you. And that is the most F you thing that you can tell someone. That's the way I interpret it.
Yeah, it's offensive.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. It is.
Yeah, you're going to pray for me to stop having my own mind?
Yeah.
You're going to stop. You're going to pray for me to stop exercising the mind that you believe your God gave me. But most of their religion escapes them. You know, they've got a religion that says broad is the path to hell, and straight and narrow is the way to the kingdom of God. Well, when a nation professes in excess of 80% belief in this simplistic, whatever I did, as long as I apologize and say I'm sorry, I'll be forgiven for having done it, which means, of course, you know, Hitler up in heaven, you know, because he was baptized and everything.
Yeah.
Then that's a pretty broad way, isn't it, Isaac?
It's crazy. It is totally crazy. And, you know, things are going on in this earth and in this country, and for people to deny reality because they don't want to deal with reality, and they just want to put it off on, well, I'm afraid about it. And if it doesn't come for them, they're being told, well, you didn't pray hard enough. So that's why you didn't get that. And then they feel...
Well, that's the prosperity gospel. You know, God listens to prayers that are accompanied by credit card numbers.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's always been one of the things that made me uneasy about having to fundraise to keep the horn on the air, Isaac. I'm not changing subjects either. But I was raised watching these televangelists on TV who would sweat and shake and scream and cry, talk about God calling them home. And there was my grandmother on retirement, on Social Security, who paid an ungodly amount of money for a PTL leather-bound, embossed, annotated, circles and arrows and a paragraph on the back of each one Bible. Still got it.
Yeah, we got this shit in our house, too, when I was a kid, from PTL.
And it used to just drive my father nuts.
Yeah.
And my mother would say, now, Kenneth. And it's, you know, it's just, you know, we're confronting some of it now. Because people are, you know, I guess about every 2 weeks the Jehovah's Witnesses show up on our steps. Because they're convinced that they're going to save Agnes yet. Usually when they show up, she goes and hides in the bathtub away from the window, and we refer to that as Agnes being in the witness protection program.
Oh, they're going for the soft sell. Get the first lady of the house so they can get that heathen Bob. That's how
yeah.
I think.
And you know, people have tried to tell us that, you know, you're welcome to try. Do tell me everything you want, and I'll be happy to listen, but I'm only going to listen if you're going to listen to me afterward. Mm-hmm. And you know what? They go away, Isaac. They go away.
But the light roaches, they come back.
Yeah. Exactly. Hey, I got to roll. I just realized what time it is.
Yeah. Enjoy the show. Keep doing what you're doing.
Going to try.
Yeah, just keep on doing it.
All right. Don't be such a stranger.
Well, I'll be the fly on the wall.
All right. Sounds good. You take care, Isaac.
You take care.
Bye now. Isaac closes the program. Thank you very much, Isaac. Thanks to everybody who makes all of this happen. I am sad to report that there have been no matching contributions for Robert's It's Already November 20th challenge, $75. That would have been 7.5 folks at $10 apiece. Makes it rough. But ain't nobody going to sweat nor cry nor talk about being called home. It just makes it harder to keep all this going. But thanks to those of you who do keep it going. Thank you so much.